Welcome everybody. Maseches Makos is what we're going to be learning. Excited to start this new endeavor. Normally, the way that we've done the Gemara Shir is we're sitting around a table and it is very give and take, back and forth, which of course slows down the pace, but it makes it a little bit more engaging. So now we're on Zoom, so it's going to be a little bit more one-sided. We'll hopefully go a little bit quicker because of that. I don't think we'll finish an entire Amud today because there's like so much background to get started in the beginning of the Maseches. The Masechta, but that's how it will go, and then maybe afterwards I'll hang around for as long as anybody wants, so we can deal with some questions. So you save your questions for later, but let us jump right in. Maseches Makos has three different prakim. Each one is a world unto itself. The first parak, Ketzad HaEdim, addresses the concept called Edim Zomamin. Edim Zomamin is what we're going to be discussing for the next couple of weeks. For sure, so we'll become very familiar with it. It is a very specific type of false witness. So we're going to be discussing the process of Beis Din and witnesses and how we address those witnesses. Edim Zomamin literally means conspiring witnesses. They are a specific type of false witness. We will address it at great length in a moment. The second parak addresses Ir Miklot Golos, which is the halacha that if somebody kills somebody inadvertently, Beshogig, by accident, they have to run to an Ir Miklot and they stay there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. That is the entire second parak. We will actually touch a little bit on that this evening, as well. And then the third parak actually addresses what the Maseches gets its name from, Makos. Which prohibitions bring about the particular punishment of Makos? But let's start right from the top. The Mishnah opens with the following question. If you don't, I'm not sure if you have it in front of you, you could see what I've screen shared. But the Mishnah opens with the following question. There is a link again in the chat box if you want to download it from Sefaria and follow there. Ketzad ha'edim na'asin zomimin. The Mishnah asks, how do we establish or create, how are witnesses made into Edim Zomamin? Now, to understand this first question, we need a little bit of background. And that is the entire concept of Beis Din. The way that a Beis Din functions is through testimony. Edim, two witnesses come in, they testify to whatever it is that they see. We will grill them as a Beis Din. We will separate them, we will ask them a slew of questions to make sure that they are telling the truth. We will ask them where they were, when it happened, what was going on in the back, all sorts of questions which the Gemara and Maseches Sanhedrin and Makos addresses a little bit. If the witnesses pass all of our tests and they are accepted as valid witnesses, their testimony is gold. Once witnesses are accepted in a Beis Din, what they say is considered fact, and we will deal with that. So much so, we will put somebody to death based on the words of these two witnesses. Forget about monetary law, where we'll take money from one person and transfer it to another person. If they say, we were there, we saw Reuven hit Shimon's car, he owes him the money. So of course we'll deal with monetary law, but we will even give lashes, and we will even kill somebody. Two people come in and they say, we saw so-and-so strike a match on Shabbos, and we warned him, and we said, you're not allowed to do that, and if you do that, we'll put you to death, and he did it. How do we know, how do we as a Beis Din know that? Two witnesses come in, they go through the process. If they testify, their word is gold, and we will address that and the situation based on their particular testimony. That is the foundation of how a Beis Din functions, through the witnesses and their testimony. Now, of course, the big concern is, what happens if witnesses aren't telling the truth? We have to have a process in place. One of the Aseres HaDibros, of course, is Lo Sa'aneh B'Reyecha Eitsheker. You're not allowed to be a false witness. There are several different types of false witnesses. Let me start with Edim Zomamin, even though it's the most complicated form, but let's just start with what that is, and then we'll go back and talk about all of the others. Edim Zomamin is the name that we give to false witnesses. And the way that they are proven false witnesses is because after they give their testimony and they say, let's say I come in, we'll talk about Reuven and Shimon. Reuven and Shimon will be our classic examples of false witnesses, or witnesses in general. So Reuven and Shimon come in and they say, we were in the Bell Center on a Tuesday night in whenever it was in November. They give a specific date, and a fight broke out in our section, and we saw, they testify, so-and-so, Plony will be the guy we're talking about. Plony took out a gun and he shot somebody else. He killed him right there on the spot. We saw it. So that we now have all the testimony that we need. We have a time, we have a place, we have everything that took place. And the witnesses, Reuven and Shimon, gave us their testimony. Based on their testimony, we would, of course, put Plony, the murderer, we would put him to death, assuming that we had everything that we needed. What happens if after Reuven and Shimon give us their testimony, two other witnesses come into court and they say, we don't know anything about this guy Plony, this murderer. We don't even know anything about the Bell Center. All that we know is that on that same night when these two witnesses, Reuven and Shimon, who came in before us, who said they were in the Bell Center on that night in that place, they were actually with us somewhere else at that exact time. So there's no way that they could have testified to whatever it is that they testified to. They were with us at that time. They weren't there to testify about whatever it is that they're testifying. That is the specific case called Edim Zomen. That is a chiddush that the Torah says, under such a circumstance, we would believe the second witnesses who come in about what they said about the first witnesses, that they weren't there when they said they were. They said they were in the Bell Center on that Tuesday night. It's not true. They were in New York with us that particular Tuesday night. We would then establish those first witnesses as Edim Zomim. They are what's called conspiring witnesses. They have planned this, and they were not there to testify to the facts that they were testifying to. That is the specific case of Edim Zomim. Let's talk about some of the other cases and then go back to that case. A more common example of false witnesses would be two witnesses come in and they testify about whatever it is that they testify. Let's say they testified that, Plony killed somebody else. Whatever the case may be, Reuven and Shimon come in and they say, we were there, we saw Plony in the forest, he killed his buddy. And then the buddy who we said was killed, the victim, he walks into court. He says, clearly it's a lie. Here I am. So under that circumstance, so the first witnesses would prove to be they're liars because they testified to the fact that a guy named Plony killed this fellow, the victim, and the victim is alive and well. So whatever they testified to is clearly a lie. That's a circumstance in which the reality of life proves to the Beis Din that whatever they testify to is false because the facts on the ground prove them to be false. That's one category of in which we know that they are liars. There's another category which is much more complicated, that's not clear who's lying. Like, for example, what would be if the two witnesses came in and they said, we saw Reuven kill Shimon. So the two witnesses come in, Reuven, we were there. And then two other witnesses come in and they say, that's impossible. Reuven was with us that day somewhere else. They're not talking about the witnesses. They say Reuven, the murderer, was with us somewhere else. So now you're a Beis Din. What do you do with that situation? You have two witnesses who came in and said, Reuven's a murderer. Two other witnesses came in and they said, can't be. Reuven was with us at that same time that they're testifying that he killed somebody. He wasn't there. He was with us. Who do you believe if you're a Beis Din? Do you believe the first set of witnesses that said Reuven was in wherever it may be in Montreal at the time? Or do you believe the second set of witnesses who said Reuven wasn't in Montreal to be a murderer? He was in New York at the time. So the reality is Beis Din would have no idea what to do. Why would we believe the first ones more than the second ones? The first ones are testifying Reuven was in Montreal. The second ones are testifying Reuven was in New York. Beis Din would literally throw up its hands and say, one of the two of you is lying, because Reuven could not have been in the same place at the same time, in two different places at the same time. I just don't know where he was. I don't know to believe the first ones. I don't need to believe the second ones. And so Beis Din would, in essence, throw out all of their testimony because there's nothing they could do with it. There's conflicting testimony about the facts on the ground as to what took place here. Who should we believe? We don't know what to do. That's called, in English, contradictory witnesses or testimony. And in Hebrew, we call that edus hakchasha. They were makchish. They contradicted each other. And we don't know what to do. The Torah has a specific description of, again, what's called Edim Zomimin. And just to go back, we said this a moment ago. Let's actually read the Mishnah. I'm going to share the Mishnah with you. Oops, sorry. Didn't mean to do that. There it is. This is a later mission in the first parak. This is actually on Daf Hey. It's the third or fourth mission in the Masechet. Masechet Makos shares a quality with many other Masechetas in the Gemara, and that is... Did I lose my screen share? I did. I meant to share it.
Make sure you're sharing the Mishnah window.
There. Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah. Masechet Makos jumps right into the middle of the story when it really should have started. When I say that it really should have started, meaning from as a person learning it for the first time, one might have thought there would be a better place of like a point of entry than where it does. Masechet Shabbos, for example, does that. The 39 Malachos are listed on Daf Ayin Gimel in the middle of the seventh parak. The Gemara, the Mishnah, finally gets around to listing. Well, what are the 39 Malachos? But the first couple prakim sort of jump right into specific malachas, hotzah, and other things. And then later on, it almost goes back and says, well, we really should have started with this, but let's describe this. So Masechet Makos does the same thing. This is a later Mishnah in the first parak. We're going to quote it right in the first daf of the Gemara anyway. But the Mishnah says as follows. Ein ha'edim na'asin zoymimin ad shi'azumu es atzman. We only can establish edim zoymimin if we can contradict the witnesses themselves. What that means is, as opposed to contradicting their testimony, we're going to contradict them. Now, the Mishnah is going to explain what's the difference between contradicting their testimony or contradicting them. That's what we've been discussing. If we contradict their testimony, that would be where they said, Reuven's a murderer. We saw him in Montreal on a Tuesday night. And then two other witnesses would come in and say, that testimony is impossible because Reuven, who you're claiming was in Montreal, Reuven wasn't there that night. He was in New York. There, that second set is contradicting the testimony of the first set. That just establishes contradictory edus, contradictory testimony. It does not establish the first set as this special type of edim zomumin. Let's read that Mishnah inside. Ketzad. What does it mean to contradict themselves? So the Mishnah says, Ketzad. How is that so? Amru mi'idin anu bi'ish ploni, shaharages hanefesh. The Mishnah brings an example that we've been talking about. If two people come in and they say, we testify against a person named Ploni. Ploni, of course, is just the name of some guy. Who is harages hanefesh? He killed somebody. And then Amru Lahan, and then subsequent to their testimony, a set of witnesses come in, and they say, Hey Chatem Me'idin, how could you possibly testify that Reuven is a murderer? Shehare Neherog Zeh, because the person that you're saying Reuven killed, O Hahorek, or Reuven himself, who you're claiming was a murderer, Haya Imanu, O So Hayom, he was with us, Bimakom Ploni, somewhere else. So that your testimony, what the words you say, can't be true because the murderer or the murdered was with us. Ein elu zomimin. Then the first set, they are not established as edim zomimin because we didn't contradict them. We only contradicted the second set, only contradicted their testimony. Aval amru lahem. But if the second set of witnesses would come in and would say about the first set, Heich atem me'idin, how could you possibly be testifying to this? Sha'are atem heyitem imanu, you were with us, Oso hayom, on that day, bimakom ploni, somewhere else, then hare elu zomimin. Then the first set are established as what we call edim zomimin. Now, the interesting part about this is, it might actually be true that Reuven killed Shimon in Montreal on the exact date that the testimony is being given. Meaning, the first two witnesses come in and they said, we were in, again, the Bell Center, it was a Tuesday night, it was November 4th, we saw the whole thing happen. Two other witnesses then come in and they say, it's impossible that you guys are testifying to that, you were with us in New York on November 4th. That will make the first set of witnesses edim zomimin. It might actually be true that Reuven killed her. We have no idea. The second set are simply saying, listen, we don't know anything about Reuven. We don't know anything about Shimon. We don't know what happened in the Bell Center that night. All we know is that these witnesses who were claiming that they were in the Bell Center that Tuesday night at that time, that's not true because they were with us somewhere else. That establishes the first set of witnesses as edim Zomimin, a very specific type of false witness in which they were disproven because we said, a second set said, they were with us. And the chiddush of the Torah is that we believe the second set, that the first set was not where they said they were. They said they were in Montreal and witnessed the event. And now that we have new testimony, we believe the second set that they were actually in New York. Now, part two of our introduction is once we've established Eidim Zomimin, so what happens to Eidim Zomimin? What's the consequence of being a false witness in this specific term of being an Eid Zomim? So that the Torah has another chiddush in which it says, Va'asisem lo ka'asher zamam la'asos la'achiv. We will do to them, literally means to him, like they're as if they were a single group. We will do to this group of witnesses, the first set, ka'asher zamam, exactly as they conspired, exactly as they planned to do to the person upon whom they originally testified. And that is, in plain English, whatever they were trying to get done to their victim of their testimony, we are going to do to them. A very unique punishment in the Torah. Normally, whatever punishment is it's etched in stone, so to speak. This violation gets a monetary punishment. This violation gets malchus, gets lashes. This punishment gets a chiv misa. Maybe it's a misa b'dei shemayim, a heavenly death sentence, or maybe even by a basin a death sentence. But it's very clear, before a person were to do anything, what their punishment is going to be. It's look it up, whatever it is. This punishment is, you tried to do something to that guy you testified about, and then you were found to be Eidim Zomimin. You weren't even there at the time that you testified to it. We have other witnesses saying that you were somewhere else. We're going to do to the witnesses whatever they were trying to get done. So, for example, let's say two witnesses came in. Reuven and Shimon come into court and they say, we saw Chaim damage someone else's car. So Chaim owes so-and-so $1,000. We were there, we saw it, we're coming here to testify to make sure that Chaim pays the money as he's supposed to because the accident took place this time, this place, we saw it. And then two other witnesses come in and they say to the first set of witnesses, to Reuven and Shimon, how could you testify that you saw Chaim in his car? Again, let me take one quick step back. In order to be valid testimony, you must share where the event happened and when it happened. You cannot testify unless you give us those details. And that's because unless you open yourself up to someone else coming and saying, you were with us at that time somewhere else, your testimony is completely invalid. We don't care about it. You must open yourself. It's called Eidus Sheyachol Lehazima. It's testimony that could be proven to be an Eid Zomim because you told us where you are and when it happened, so that you're opening yourself up. You better had been there because someone else might be able to come and say that you were somewhere else. But in this case, again, they said, we saw the accident. It happened on this night and this place at this time. And then two other witnesses say, listen, maybe it did or it didn't happen, but you can't say that because you were with us. So what happens to those first witnesses who are the Eidim Zomimin? They have to pay $1,000 to Chaim, who they were testifying against. The Mishnah is going to discuss later, we're not going to get to it tonight for sure, that they are allowed to split that monetary payment between the two witnesses. This one will pay $500 and this one will pay $500. If they were testifying that a person owed $100,000, they're going to have to pay the $100,000. Whatever they were trying to get done to the person they testified against, they have to pay that money. What if they testified, they said, we saw somebody walking to a McDonald's and eat a cheeseburger, he's Chayev Malkus. He's chayev, he has to be given lashes. He violated a prohibition of the Torah that brings about the punishment of lashes. And then those two witnesses are found to be, again, Eidim Zomimin, because two other people came in and said, how could you testify that you saw them at this McDonald's, in this place, at this time? You were somewhere else. You were with us at that time. So then we would give those two Eidim Zomimin Malkus. They were trying to give Malkus. They're going to get the Malkus. Here the Mishnah says, later on again, they can't split that. Just like anyone who's punishable with Malkus gets the full 39, assuming they're physically fit to be able to withstand 39, each one of the two witnesses would get the full 39 sets of Malkus. And lastly, just as an example, if witnesses would come in and say, Reuven and Shimon come in and they say, we saw Chaim strike a match on Shabbos and we warned him and we said, don't do it, you're not allowed to, we're gonna put you to death for doing so. And Chaim said he didn't care and he struck the match. And now we're here to testify that Chaim is Chayiv Misa, we have to stone him, Skila, for violating Shabbos. And then it turns out two other witnesses come in and they say to Reuven and Shimon, our first two witnesses, they said, we don't know Chayim, we don't know anything about Hilchah Shabbos. All we know is that you weren't where you said you were at the time you were with us. We're going to do to Reuven and Shimon what they were trying to do to Chaim. They will get stoned with Skila for having tried to put Chaim to death with Skila. That's the two elements of Eidin Zomim. And number one, how does it happen? It happens specifically with two other witnesses coming in and saying, you were with us at that time. Number two, there's a very unique punishment in the Torah for Eidim Zomimin. Once two witnesses are established as Eidim Zomimin, we will then give to them the exact punishment that they were trying to get done to somebody else. And that is called Ka'asher Zamam. Do to them, Va'asisem lo Ka'asher Zamam. Do to them as they conspired, as they planned to do to someone else. Again, the word Zomimin, conspiring or planning witnesses. Okay, that is all of our background. Now back to our mission. I'm going to use the same screen share for our first mission, and then we'll go back to the Gemara. But we might as well use this since this is open. I hope you all can see that in front of us. So this is the first Mishnah in Maseches Makos. What's in front of you is just the Mishnah. If you're using my screen share, it's just the Mishnah. So we're going to get to the Gemara in a moment. First Mishnah is really only half of this whole Mishnah here, but let's learn it together. Ketzad ha'edim na'asin zomimin. So the Gemara opens with a question of Ketzad ha'edim na'asin zomimin. So how do witnesses become established as Eidim Zomimin? What needs to happen to make them into Eidim Zomimin? What the Mishnah is now going to do is bring two cases. First case really has two parallel components, but two separate cases. And what the Mishnah is going to do is teach us exceptions to the rule of Eidim Zomimin. This is what I meant by sometimes the Mishnah jumps right in. Before the Mishnah even tells us the rule, we learned the fourth or fifth Mishnah when we discuss the difference between contradicting their testimony or contradicting themselves. The first Mishnah, which we're doing right now, just jumps right in and gives us exceptions to the rule of Eidim Zomimin. What do I mean by exceptions to the rule of Eidim Zomimin? Sometimes, either we can't or we're not allowed to administer the punishment to the Eidim Zomimin like they were trying to do. What would be an example of something where we can't or we're not allowed? So the Mishnah gives us the first example, and that is the following case. Me'idin onu bi'ish ploni. We testify, meaning if two witnesses come in and they say, we want to testify about a certain person, an ish ploni, shehu ben grusha o ben chalutza, that he is the son of a divorcee or the son of a chalutza. What does that mean? What are we talking about here? So we're talking about a Kohen. A Kohen, of course, has a very special status amongst the Jewish people. His special status gives him the privilege of first Aliyah, but in the times of being able to duchen, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, it was, of course, even more significant. He could eat truma, he could work in the Beis HaMikdash. Very, very special status of being a Kohen, and the status of a Kohen was protected. You had to be able to testify and prove that your lineage was valid, and there were no problems along the line of your lineage that would in some way disqualify you from being a Kohen. The Mishnayos and other Maseches, Ksuvas, if I remember, and elsewhere, it's maybe Sanhedrin, discuss the process, discuss the process of, let's say, a Kohen moves into town. How does he prove, you know, in today's day and age, he says he's a Kohen, okay, so we give him a first Aliyah. We don't have to look three generations back into his lineage, because worst comes to worst, like, he got the Kohen Aliyah. But if in the days of Truma, if a guy moves into town and he says, my name is Kohen, I'm a Kohen, my father's a Kohen, if I give him my truma and he eats it, there's a very serious violation if he's not really a Kohen. I need to know his status. Is he a Kohen or not? So you'd have to prove it. You'd have to go back. There was a whole process of how a Kohen would prove his lineage. Now, one of the things that could disqualify a Kohen from being a valid Kohen would be if a Kohen marries a woman he's not allowed to marry. Any children from that marriage are by definition called a halal. They're literally would be translated as a void. It would be the literal translation, like outer space is called halal, or chilul Hashem, a desecration. They were sanctified, but this child that's born is a halal. He does not have the sanctity of a Kohen because his father, the Kohen, wasn't allowed to marry this woman. The classic example of a woman a Kohen is not allowed to marry is a grusha, is a woman who's been divorced. A Kohen can't marry a grusha. If he did, it's a valid marriage, meaning they need a get to get divorced. The marriage takes hold. But any children that they have, since the Kohen wasn't allowed to marry this woman who had been previously divorced, any children they have are not valid Kohanim. Which means the Mishnah describes the following case. That child of such a marriage moves into town and says, I'm a Kohen. He tries to pull the wool over everybody's eyes. And he wants to have his status. He grew up in a certain town, and everybody knew that he was the son of a Kohen who married a Grusha. So they don't treat him like a Kohen, which they're not supposed to. So he says, I want to start fresh. He moves to a new town, and he claims he's a Kohen. So, assuming everybody believes him, they treat him like a Kohen. And then two witnesses show up from his first town. And two witnesses come to the Beis Din, and they say, we need to let you know, this guy, he came. You should just know, he's a Ben Grusha. He's the son of a divorcee. His father married this woman. And how do we know that she's divorced? The witnesses say, we were at her divorce proceedings. We were in the Beis Din when that woman, this Cohen's mother, was divorced, whatever, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, however long it was. We were there. The divorce happened on this date, in this place. These were the witnesses involved. We saw the whole thing. And then we saw the divorcee marry his father, the Kohen. So we are here to testify. Nothing against this kid who might be 10, he might be 30. Nothing against this guy, but you just need to know he's not really a Kohen. If two witnesses would testify to that, so we would establish his status. He's not a valid Kohen. We take their testimony and we cross him off our list of valid Kohanim. Similarly, if a woman is a chalutza, chalutza means she had the process of chalitza done. Chalitza, again, is the process where if a woman's husband dies and he doesn't have any children, so she now is what's called an almana. She's a widowed woman, but she's not just any almana. She is an almana of a husband who didn't have any children, and now she needs to do the mitzvah of yibum to marry one of her brothers-in-law. The husband's brother, any of his surviving brothers, she does the mitzvah of yibum and she marries him. Already in the times of the Gemara, they didn't allow women to perform yibum, and instead, the Torah also allows the process of chalitza. Chalitza is where either the widowed woman or the brother-in-law don't want to get married, so the Torah doesn't force the marriage upon them. The Torah says, you're supposed to marry each other. If you don't want to, instead you do the process of chalitza. And that's the process where they go to a Beis Din, a special court, and he wears a special shoe. She removes the shoe and she throws it off to the side, and then she spits on the ground in front of him and she says, this brother-in-law of mine doesn't want to uphold the name of his deceased brother. He doesn't want to marry me. And he says, I don't want to marry you. They go through a whole process and they go their own separate ways. And that's sort of like a get. It's not exactly a divorce because they were never married, but it's the deceased's brother's marriage, since he died without children, sort of transfers to one of his living brothers. And now they have to end it with the process of chalitza. In the same way that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who was rejected in a divorce, Kohen can't marry her. He also can't marry a woman who was rejected through chalitza. Either way, Kohen is not allowed to marry such a woman. And therefore, we'd have the same situation in which if two witnesses came in and they said about a certain guy who was claiming to be a Kohen, and they said to the Beis Din, they said, Rabbi Yisrael, we just need to let you know, this guy is claiming to be a Kohen. We were at his mother's chalitza process many years ago. She did chalitza. Then she remarried a Kohen. She wasn't allowed to marry that Kohen. And this person standing in front of us now is the son of that chalitza. He's not a valid Kohen. That would be testimony in which we would say, we would disqualify the Kohen based on that testimony. Now that leads us to our Mishnah. What would happen if those two witnesses who came in to the Beis Din to say, listen, you just need to know that this guy is not really a valid Kohen. What if they were the liars? It's not that the kid moved in trying to get a fresh start and this child was trying to fool everybody and claim he's a Kohen. He is a valid Kohen. He didn't do anything wrong. We got two schnooks coming in as witnesses saying, we were at this Kohen's mother's divorce. We were at this Kohen's mother's chalitza. And we're testifying to you, the Beis Din, that this guy in front of us, he's not a valid Kohen. Beis Din, of course, takes it very seriously until two other witnesses come into court and they say to the first set of witnesses, how could you claim you were at that woman's divorce? hearings on this specific date and this specific time. At that specific date and that specific time, you were with us somewhere else. You weren't anywhere near where you're claiming the divorce. That was not true. In that case, we now have two witnesses who are Eidim Zomimim. We establish them to be Eidim Zomimim. What should we do? What's the punishment for Eidim Zomimim? So we know the punishment is a specific punishment called Kasher Zomim, due to them, like they were trying to do. Well, what were they trying to do in this instance? What they were trying to do was disqualify a Kohen from his status of Kahuna. Is that something that we can then do to them? If they were testifying that Chaim owed $1,000, we'll make them pay $1,000. If they were testifying that Chaim needed to get Malkos, we'll give them Malkos. If they were testifying that Chaim was Chayv Skila for lighting a match on Shabbos, we'll make them Chayv Skila. But here, what Reuven and Shimon are testifying to is that Chaim is not really a Kohen. So can we then do that back to Reuven and Shimon, the witnesses? Well, let's say Reuven and Shimon aren't Kohanim. So if they're not Kohanim, then of course we can't make them into disqualified Kohanim as their punishment, because they were never Kohanim to begin with. So it's not even relevant to discuss if we could fulfill Kasher Zamam. Of course that's going to be an exceptional type of case, because they're not even Kohanim. But what if they are Kohanim? Let's say the two witnesses, Reuven and Shimon, who came in to testify against Chaim, that he's a disqualified Kohen because he's the son of a divorcee or he's the son of a chalutza. Let's say Reuven and Shimon are Kohanim. So maybe you would think Kasher Zamam would apply, and therefore as a punishment, we should take away their status as Kohanim. On that, the Mishnah teaches this is an exception. Again, Me'idim, I'm reading from the first line of the Mishnah. Me'idim anabish plonish ben grusha ben chalutza. If two witnesses would come in and testify against a certain person, a plony, and say, he's a disqualified Kohen, he's a ben grusha, he's the son of a divorcee, or he's a ben chalutza, the son of a chalutza, and then it turns out that those first two witnesses are really Eidim Zomimin, says the Mishnah, Ein Omrim, Ya'aseh Zeh Ben Grusha O Ben Chalutza Tachtov. We do not say that we should make those two witnesses into a Ben Grusha or a Ben Chalutza, meaning make them into the status of a disqualified Kohen in their place, meaning in the place of the person they were testifying against, our poor Chaim. Ella Loke Arbaim. Here is an exception. Normally, we apply the rule of Kasher Zamam. Whatever witnesses were trying to do, we do to them. Here, the Mishnah teaches an exception. If they were trying to make a Kohen disqualified, we do not make them disqualified, either because they're not even Kohanim in the first place, but even if they are Kohanim, we do not apply that rule. And we'll see, of course, in the Gemara why this is. But what's the exceptional rule? Here, instead of giving them what they tried to do, they will get Malkos. Now, the Mishnah, of course, uses the language Loke Arba'im. You're familiar, of course, that it's really not 40, it's really only 39. But the Chumash itself uses the language of Yaken, Arba'im Yaken, and we give him 40, of which our Mishnayos and Maseches Makos will eventually teach that it's really only 39. But the Mishnah uses the language of the Chumash that it's a full 40. But the main point, of course, is that this is an exception to the rule of Kasher Zamam. Instead of giving them what they were trying to do, we give them Malkos. The second exception of our Mishnah is Me'idin Anu Bi'ish Ploni Shu Chayev Liglos. Let's say we testify, two people come into court, and they testify that a person is obligated to go into exile. What do they mean when they say he's obligated to go into exile? That he's obligated to run to an ir miklat. Reuven and Shimon come into court, and they say, they come running and panting, we were just in a forest. And in this forest, Chaim was chopping wood. And when Chaim was chopping wood, he took a swing with his axe. He didn't look around as he needed to, and the handle, the metal flew off of the axe handle, or a wood chip came flying off of the tree. We'll see, there's going to be a dispute exactly what the case is when we get to the second parak. Either way, they come in and they say, and then that axe or the chip of wood flew through the air, and it struck Nebuch, somebody else who was standing there in the forest, and therefore Chaim is a inadvertent murderer. He killed somebody by accident, and therefore he's obligated to go live in an ir miklat. So, New Basin would take the testimony, and under normal circumstances, they would say, okay, Chaim is a murderer, not by on purpose, but he's an accidental murderer, and they would decree, psak din, Chaim needs to go live in an ir miklat. What would happen if, again, after this, two other witnesses would subsequently come in? And they would say to Reuven and Shimon, we don't know Chaim, we don't know anything about the forest. All we know is that in order for you to testify, you had to have given a date and a time when you were in the forest with Chaim. And at that date, in that time, it's not true. You were with us in New York. You weren't in the forest. You were with us at that time. Okay, now that we have the second set of witnesses, that would establish the first set as Edim Zomimin. Now that the first set has been established as Edim Zomimin, what's the punishment of Edim Zomimin? So the normal punishment is Ka'asher Zomim, like you planned on doing to him, we're going to do to you. Which means what should have happened to our Reuven and Shimon in this particular case? We should have sent them to an Ir Miklat and say, you now have to live in Galus, in exile in an Ir Miklat until the death of the Kohen Gadol. So that is the second case of our Mishnah that says this is an exception. Even though technically that should have been what we do to the witnesses, we don't. And again, the Mishnah says, if two witnesses come in and they testify against a certain guy, Ploni, that he's chayiv to go into Golos, to go into exile because he killed somebody accidentally, Ein Omrim, we do not say, Yigla ze tachtav, that these witnesses should now go into Ir Miklat instead of him, Ela loke arba'im, but instead, they will get the punishment of 40 lashes. So that in essence, what our Mishnah has done, just scrolling back to the top of our Mishnah, the Mishnah opens with a question of Ketzad ha'edim na'asim zomimin, how are witnesses established as edim zomimin? And then the Mishnah gives two exceptions to the general rule of edim zomimin. Exception number one is where witnesses testify about the status of a Kohen, whether it's because he's a Ben Grusha, the son of a divorcee, or he's a Ben Chalutza, the son of a woman who had Chalitza done. But the first case is where witnesses testify that a Kohen is disqualified from the status of the Kahuna. If those witnesses are subsequently found to be Edim Zomimin, we do not apply the rule of Ka'asher Zomim. We don't apply the rule and make them disqualified, even if they're Kohanim. Obviously, if they're not Kohanim, we can't apply that. But even if they're Kohanim, we don't apply the rule, but instead they're Chayiv Malkus. They get 40 lashes. And the second exception the Mishnah teaches is if witnesses testify that a person killed somebody inadvertently and therefore would have to live the rest of his life until the death of the Kohen Gadol in a Ir Miklat, there too, we don't apply the rule of Ka'asher Zomim, and instead we give them Malkus Arba'im, they get 40 lashes. That is the opening Mishnah of our Masechet. Let's start the Gemara, which you have in front of you, or in the chat you have a link to Sefaria, and you could check it out there as well. The Gemara is a few lines down in the Mishnah. We read the Mishnah together. The Gemara says as follows. Let me just, outside, before we read inside, the Gemara expressed the Gemara's opening problem. The Mishnah started with a question. The question was, Ketzad ha'edim na'asin zomimin. How are witnesses made into edim zomimin? Now, if we took that question alone, how are witnesses made into edim zomimin, and we wanted to answer that question, how would we answer that question? How are witnesses, Ketzad ha'edim na'asin zomimin? How are witnesses made into edim zomimin? What's the answer to that question? The answer to that question is the Mishnah on Daf Hey that says if you testify against the witnesses themselves as opposed to against their testimony, that's how we prove witnesses to be Edim Zomim. You need to say you were with us at this time. That's the answer to that question. Similarly, the actual answer of the first case of our Mishnah brings two exceptions to the rules. So we start with, the Mishnah opens with a question of Ketzad ha'edim na'asin zomimin, how are witnesses made into edim zomimin? And then we don't answer that question. Instead of answering the question of how are witnesses made into edim zomimin, we actually brought two exceptions where we do not apply the rule of Ka'asher Zomim. So the Gemara is very troubled by not the first two cases of the Mishnah. The first two cases are very fine. You brought me exceptions. There's a rule if you try to disqualify a Kohen, if you try to send somebody to an Ir Miklat by claiming he killed somebody, in both of those cases are exceptions to the rule of Kasher. Zaman, very nice. We have a Mishnah that teaches me exceptions. But how could you start that Mishnah with a question that says, how do you establish Eidim Zomimin? We're not answering that question. We're answering a question of how do we not apply the rule of Eidim Zomimin? So why would you start by asking, how do you establish Eidim Zomimin? That's the Gemara's opening question. Instead of, which is the actual language of the Mishnah, of Ketzad HaEidim Na'asin Zomimin, or how do witnesses become Eidim Zomimin, really the Gemara says, HaKetzad Ein HaEidim Na'asin Zomimin. What you should have asked as the opening line of our Mishnah should have been, in what circumstances do we not create regular Eidim Zomimin? You asked the wrong question, the Gemara asks. You asked, how do we establish Eidim Zomimin? You should have asked, when do we not apply the regular rule of Eidim Zomimin? And then the Gemara furthers its question, Va'odin. Furthermore, it says, if you do want to ask the question the way you asked it, of Ketzad HaEidim Na'asin Zomimin, how are witnesses established as Eidim Zomimin, we actually answered that question. That's answered on Daf Hey in a subsequent Mishnah, which we learned earlier, that says, this is how we establish Eidim Zomimin. Don't testify against the second set, against what they said. It's not enough just to say that the murderer or the murdered was with us. You have to testify against the witnesses themselves and say, you were with us. We have an answer to this question. Ketzad Eidim Na'asin Zomimin, I'll tell you how. Open up Daf Hey. You'll see the next Mishnah. So why are you asking a question on Daf Beis, but you're going to end up answering it much later? So the Gemara says, Va'odin, furthermore, mi diktani lekaman, from the fact that you're going to teach me later on, aval amru lahem, but if the, again, this is a quote from what we learned earlier, the later Mishnah, but if the second set say to them, heich atem me'idin, how could you testify this? This is again what the second set says to the first set. Shaharei ba'oso ayom, on that day, atem ha'isem imono b'makom ploni, you were with us someplace else during that time. Hare elu zomimin, the Mishnah says those are who the Eidim Zomimin are. So since we already have an answer to this question, and what you're going to teach me on Daf Beis are exceptions, why are you starting with the phrase of how are witnesses made into Eidim Zomimin? It's just the wrong opening question for the exceptions that we are about to teach. And the Gemara gives, we'll end with this last point. I'm not even sure we'll get through the whole thing, but let's just start at least. The Gemara says, you're right. Our Mishnah is a classic example in which we, who are now starting Maseches Makos, are really jumping into the middle of the story. But Maseches Makos is not the very first Maseches. We've learned other Maseches as well. And one of them is Maseches Sanhedrin. So for example, just as an example, if you opened up Book 5 in the Harry Potter series, and you read the first page, and you would ask, this page doesn't make any sense. Who in the world is this person? And why is it? So anyone who is a fan of Harry Potter would say, you can't just open up Book 5 and ask that question. You have to understand what was going on at the end of Book 4. And then, if you chaft what was going on at the end of Book 4, the first couple of pages of Book 5 will make sense to you. But if you start at Book 5, you're not going to have a clue what's going on. Says the Gemara, that's exactly what's happening over here. Maseches Makos comes on the heels of Maseches Sanhedrin. Maseches Sanhedrin, which discusses various different types, at the end of the Masechet discusses all of the different types of Chiyuvei Misei Beis Din, the four capital punishments that a Beis Din would administer. And it goes through one perek each, all of the people who are Chayav Skila, or Chayav Sreifa, Chenek, Herek, all the different punishments. The very, very, very last Mishnah in all of Maseches Sanhedrin also addresses a case of Eidim Zomimin. Let me just introduce this case now, and then we'll call it a day. We'll pick up with this Mirtz Hashem next week. One of the unique cases that Maseches Sanhedrin addresses is the case, or not unique, one of the cases is adultery. Also one of the Aseres HaDibros, the punishment for adultery. If a man were to live with a married woman, and it's not his married wife, she's married to someone else, so the punishment for both the man and the woman is chenek. Chenek is strangulation. Out of all of the four capital punishments, that happens to be the least severe. For those who want to rank how bad once it's all of the death sentences, but you know, skila, stoning, is considered the worst, the most severe, and chenek, strangulation, is the least severe. Okay, whatever consolation that's worth to the people who will be killed through chenek, that's what it is. So that's the punishment for what's called a boel eshes ish. If a person lives with a married woman, both the woman and the man are chayev chenek. Of course, this comes with warning. They have to be told that what they're doing is prohibited. But if we would have testimony against such a situation, they're both chayev chenek. The Torah has an exception to that. And that exception is if the married woman is the daughter of a Kohen. If she is the daughter of a Kohen, again, she has special status. She's not just any Jewish woman. She is the daughter of a Kohen, a Bas Kohen. She has special status amongst all of the Jewish people. She married whoever it was that she married, whether the person be a Kohen or the person be a regular Yisrael. If she is caught in an adulterous relationship, so she has not only humiliated herself, not only humiliated her husband that she violated his trust, she has now humiliated the entire kahuna, the shevet of the kahuna, that they now have a daughter, a Bas Kohen, who was an adulteress. So the Torah says she will get bumped up two gradations of the Chi of Misa, and not only will she get chenek, she'll jump past hereg, which is beheading, and she'll get srefa. Srefa, which literally means burning, but that's where you pour a molten lead down the throat of the person who violated whatever the prohibition is. So in a case of regular adultery, both the man and the woman get chenek, they get strangulation. But if the woman happens to have been the daughter of a Kohen, there the Torah says she gets a higher level punishment. Not the man still gets only chenek in the adulterer, but the woman, the Bas Kohen, will get srefa. That is what the Mishnah Maseches Sanhedrin teaches. And we will now conclude the question that we'll pick up with Meretz Hashem next week is, what happens if the witnesses who testified against this adulterous couple, a woman who's the daughter of a Kohen and a regular man, what happened if those witnesses themselves were the liars? It's not true that they were adulterers, and the witnesses were proven to be Edim Zomimin. So what punishment do Edim Zomimin get? They get Kasher Zomim, whatever they were trying to do. In this case, they were actually trying to do two things. They were trying to get the woman Srefa, they were trying to get the man, excuse me, Chenek. Which one of those two would we now give to the Edim Zomim? That is what the last Mishnah Maseches Sanhedrin addresses. We will pick up with that, Mirz Hashem, next week. And then from there, we will pick up with what our Gemara does with that, how that will explain our first Mishnah here in Maseches Makos. That'll be it for that. I will answer a couple of questions. I see a couple came in. Anyone who wants to hang out and ask live as well. So available as well. So number one, can a third set of witnesses disqualify the second set? The answer to that is yes. We're going to see entire Mishnayos are going to address that question of what happens then if a third set comes in and says about the second set, how could you say that the first set was with you in New York? You were with us in California. So, and then we have to play each time that happens. Okay, that means that the third set are now making the second set Edim Zomimin. That means the first set are really truthful. That means that Reuven or Chaim is really guilty of whatever it is that he was guilty of. And then if a fourth set came into the third, we'd have to play that up. But that is indeed 100% a possibility, and we would have to work out always keeping track of that which took place. Why is the Mishnah intent on clarifying if the Edim are indeed Zomimin? Is the category of Zomimin so different from other categories? Yes. Kasher Zomim, exactly. In other words, regular false witnesses would get Malkus. We'll see if that's under what circumstances. If witnesses are simply contradictory witnesses, so then they're not blacklisted as being liars. It's just, this one said Reuven killed Shimon, and this one said it couldn't have been Reuven because Reuven was with us. So we as a Beis Din don't know who's lying. So both witnesses are just, we're not sure what to make of them. But once we establish Edim Zomimin, so now we know that they're the liars and they get the Kasher Zomim punishment. If we prove them liars in another format, then at worst they would get only Malkus. If it's not in the specific format of Edim Zomimin. That is correct. Okay, any other questions? You can take yourself off of off of mute. Happy to stick around and answer anything that you may have.
Is there going to be a process that will be described as to how to determine if there's a second set of witnesses that are trying to discredit the first set of witnesses, how we actually go about determining if the second set are truthful?
It's the same process as when the first set come in. In other words, we take them apart. We ask, where were you? How was it? Well, there's a specific set. It's called Drisha V'Chakira, a specific set of questions that we will ask. That's the same. What the Mishnah will discuss, we'll get to it, Mirtz Hashem, soon, is what happens if, let's say, group number one comes in and they say, Reuven killed Shimon. And then a second set comes in and says, impossible, you were with us somewhere else. And then another set of witnesses come in and they say, we also saw Reuven kill Shimon. And it was in the same place that the first set said it was. We were also there in the Bell Center. And then the same set of witnesses that came in and testified against the first and said, you were with us, they come in again and they say to now, what's the third set? They say, you were also with us in New York. When do we start scratching our head and say, I don't know about this set? They said about the first set that they weren't in the Bell Center, they were in New York. They said about the third set, they were in the Bell Center. When does it become fishy? And so the Mishnah will have a machlokas, exactly how many times can you do that before we start saying, you guys are clearly the liars, and we do to them. That will also be addressed. We'll get to that, Mirtz Hashem, as well. Okay. Yes. Yes, please.
What about the case? You said that the two cases, one is the witness comes to testify